Hey, everybody, I'm Matt Lodi with NEO Sports Insiders. Welcome into another podcast, and we're welcoming in one of my good friends from many, many moons. He is with Cleveland.com, one of the Indians guys, that, of course, being Zach Meisel. Also, I believe, is it award-winning author or just author? Have we won any awards yet for the books? Or
Are you handing out an award for my book?
I should. If you haven't read it, it's a great Christmas gift right now in stores. He's doing the national tour. It's the 100 Things Every Indians Fan Should Know and Do Before They Die from Triumph Books. And also, what's the second book, brother? I can't remember the name of it.
The Ohio State Buckeyes Fans Bucket List.
There you go. And, of course, that's also out in stores right now. Any book signings? I know every time I see you, you're doing something.
Yeah, it seems like every Saturday, it seems like. Being Columbus the next few weekends doing that. And I think I come back to Cleveland for one in December.
Cool. Well, check it out. You can go check him out, of course, on Twitter and, of course, on Facebook as well. But we're talking, of course, today about the Indians. We are about 2 weeks away. Actually, it'll be 2 weeks from today. A bunch of us will be in Nashville at the MLB winter meetings. But it's interesting, Mize, that already there's a lot of scuttlebutt about the Indians, which is kind of rare because usually things don't really get going until those baseball winter meetings. I know the owners' meetings are going on in Dallas, but already some rumors. John Morosi from Fox Sports last night and again today has mentioned the Indians in terms of trade rumors, and it seems to be the component is a starting pitcher from the Indians for an outfielder. What have you heard, and what do you think early on about these rumors?
Well, I think a lot of Indians fans are used to this team waiting back, sitting back in the weeds and watching all the big time free agents sign and a few trades being made, and then we get to January or maybe even early February. And that's when the Indians pounce on what's left, just because they have these financial restrictions, and they're not going to go out and trade their top prospects and mortgage the farm to win right now, or at least that's been the case in the past. I think this winter is a little different, and the Indians might even be viewed as the team that really dictates what happens throughout free agency. I think everybody knows they need offense. They need at least one outfielder, maybe two. They could use help at first base or DH, maybe third base. And so you're getting a lot of rumors about the Indians, and there's some merit in that. A lot of teams are calling on the Indians, asking for Carlos Carrasco, asking what's the price for Danny Salazar. And the Indians, knowing they need offense, are certainly listening and accepting these phone calls and negotiating. So you're going to hear the usual suspects. You're going to hear about the Cubs. You're going to hear about the Blue Jays and the Dodgers. And you're going to hear all sorts of teams, just because the Indians have a commodity in starting pitching that a lot of teams covet, and the Indians have a glaring need that everybody knows they have. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because maybe some teams will, pull out of the David Price sweepstakes because they make a trade with the Indians, or they'll realize they have to go into it. So the Indians kind of, they have some leverage here in kind of controlling the way this offseason really unfolds for a lot of teams.
Let me ask you this. Obviously, the rumor last night from Morosi was a possibility of doing something with the Yankees for Brett Gardner, who, number one, is a left-handed bat, left-handed glove, which is something the Indians really, in my opinion, don't need. They need right-handed guys, number one. But also, number two, this is not exactly Jose Bautista incarnated here. This is a guy who, in the last 2 years, I think has hit a combined 26 home runs, a career average of like 259. Am I crazy? And the people on Twitter responded in just last night saying this would be a ridiculously one-sided deal if the Indians moved a guy like Carrasco or Salazar for Brett Gardner. What am I missing in Brett Gardner?
Yeah, not much. We didn't even mention the fact that he's going to make more than $12 million a year for the next 3 years.
Right.
He's aging. He's 32 years old. I mean, he certainly passes prime. I think with the Indians, they're looking primarily for a guy who can play center field, because Michael Brantley's going to miss the first month or two, and when he comes back, you'll slot him into left field. So maybe Abraham Almonte or Tyler Naquin fills his role while he's gone, but you need someone who can play left and center right now, and Gardner fits that bill. Certainly, if you give up Carrasco, you're giving up too much. But I think you're going to hear a lot of rumors at this point, probably fed to the media by both the Indians and the opposition, saying that certain guys are available just to see what they can get. And I don't think they would trade Carrasco for Gardner. I think they're a little too smart for that. Carrasco has such a team-friendly contract, and it seems like he's just coming into his prime. And he was really the best pitcher on the Indians in 2015, and it seems like he's only going to get better next year. you probably don't part with that guy unless you're getting a guy that you know you can slot third or fourth in your order and who's going to drive and runs for you and who's going to be productive for many years. Not a guy like Brett Gardner who's going to make $38 million over the next three and is going to be playing for you while he's 35, 36 years old. The Indians went through that with Nick Swisher and Michael Bourne. So you're going to hear a lot of things, and a lot of it is probably on the right track but not quite accurate, and I think that's what that rumor is right there.
Again, we're talking with Zach Meisel, Cleveland.com, and an author as well. Zach covers the Indians for Cleveland.com, along, of course, with Paul Hoynes, who's been there for, I think, 70 years now. Zach, as far as the other teams that we heard today from Morosi, the Dodgers, the Blue Jays, he brought up the Yankees again. The Dodgers and Blue Jays, I think, have more pieces in the outfield. But as we said earlier, as you pointed out, why would the Indians do a Carrasco deal based on the fact that, as you mentioned, he was probably the best pitcher on the staff last year, at least from a, you know, point A to point B? I mean, there's been points in the year when Kluber pitched really well and even when Bauer pitched really well. But why would they give up on a guy like Carrasco, number one? And also, Toronto and the Dodgers, anybody there interest you? I know that Jose Bautista is not coming to Cleveland. Let's get at that straight right now. But anybody else there that you could see possibly being in the mix?
I think Carrasco's name is going to get thrown out there a lot because he's the one guy other teams covet the most. I think there was talk about him in the middle of the season possibly being moved, but I really think that was more other teams hoping the Indians would part with him and not just the Indians actually coming close to dealing him. I think with the Dodgers, it might be around Yasiel Puig. I think the Dodgers are probably ready to move on from him if they can get a pitcher. I think with them, it's a little tricky because Zach Greinke's a free agent. If they want to re-sign him, they certainly have the funds to do that and pair with Kershaw. But then you wonder, okay, do they really need Carrasco to add to that rotation? Do they want to forfeit some hitting for him? Or do they want to get Carrasco and then go out and sign a hitter or something like that? I mean, they're a little tough to figure out just because they have financial flexibility and they have so much talent that who knows exactly what they want to do. With Toronto, it's interesting because Mark Shapiro's over there now.
Yep.
It certainly makes sense if these two teams would talk. I do think if the Indians trade Carrasco, you really are robbing Peter to pay Paul, and you're weakening what is your strength and you're strengthening what's your weakness. And I don't know how much better you're going to be if you trade Carrasco or Salazar and you pick up an offensive piece. And I think with the Indians, the way they think, I think if they trade Carrasco, they've got to be getting a pitcher back somehow too. And it's certainly not going to be someone as good as Carrasco, but it's going to be someone that could fill out the back end of your rotation. And you're just going to rely on Salazar and Trevor Bauer and Cody Anderson taking another step forward. So with Toronto, maybe Kevin Pillar is a guy. He's one of the best defenders in the game in center field. Maybe it's Ben Revere, a good leadoff hitter, a guy who can play left or center. Maybe it's Dalton Pompey, who we saw the way his speed can change a game in the postseason. He's a really young center fielder. Jury's still out on whether he can hit at the big league level. So, those three teams, I'd be surprised if the Indians ended up making a deal with any of them just because neither seems like the ideal situation with Gardner or Puig or one of the Blue Jays guys. But certainly you're going to hear those teams floated about quite often.
When you look at the situation with their outfield right now, and I'm talking, of course, about the Indians, you end the year with Lonnie Chisenhall, who was much improved, by the way, out in right field. Abraham Almonte, who was a midseason pickup, who not many people thought much of, to be perfectly honest, but ended up having a decent season in the time that he was in Cleveland. And then, of course, Michael Brantley, who you mentioned earlier, is going to start the year probably at least the first month or two because of that surgery out. It is an area of need, but where does Almonte and Chisenhall fit in at all? Or is it a situation where, you know, Terry Francona will wait to see what happens before he can make a decision on how much impact those two guys will have in the outfield to start the year?
Yeah, I think, and you were in on these press conferences and interviews as well as I was, and I think we both can come to the conclusion that the Indians would probably feel more comfortable with Abraham Almonte as a fourth outfielder and not having to rely on him getting 500 at-bats. Certainly with Brantley out, you're probably not going to be able to have that luxury, and Almonte is going to have to play a lot the first month or two. Chisenhall probably seems like a guy who would platoon in right field. You're probably going to need a guy who can hit lefties to play right jury's still out on whether Chris Johnson can play the outfield, because he is a guy that can hit lefties and would be a perfect complement. So they need one outfielder, certainly, because if Almonte replaces Brantley at the get-go, you need a center fielder. I don't know that Tyler Naquin at AAA is ready yet. He hasn't proven he can stay healthy. He hasn't hit for a long period of time, and, I mean, he'd be a rookie anyway. So you need at least one guy, and if you're not comfortable with Almonte starting in place of Brantley for a couple months, you need a second guy. And the Indians don't have – they got rid of Ryan Raver, and Mike Avilas is gone, so they have some flexibility roster-wise where if they wanted to move Carlos Santana to DH, they could add a first baseman. If they wanted to add anyone, they could, because they have the designated hitter spot available. So they don't need to be judicious here, and they certainly have holes, and I think they can go out and get – one, two, maybe even three guys.
Again, Zach Meisel, Cleveland.com. Zach, before we let you go, final thoughts about the Rookie of the Year voting from the other night. Was surprised at all that Francisco Lindor didn't win, or, you know, kind of was expected? I wasn't too upset, and I did like how Francisco really conducted himself on the phone with us afterwards and saying how basically he was just honored to be there. I mean, classy kid, certainly a kid that's going to be around for a long time as long as he stays healthy. What do you think of the situation from the other night?
Yeah, it's amazing that Lindor turned 22 earlier this month, and he really sounds like a seasoned veteran, very polished in his interviews. It's impressive. I was not surprised Correa won it, and I'm kind of disappointed I wasn't surprised. I think we've taken a lot of strides in voting and just in the way we approach the game and acknowledging advanced statistics, placing more of a premium on defense than we did 5, 10, 15 years ago. I don't see how, if you look at the numbers offensively, I think Correa has a little bit of an edge. It's impressive that Lindor hit .313 as a rookie. It's impressive that he showed as much power as he did. I don't think anyone expected that. Correa hit 22 homers in 99 games. He batted third for a team that went to the playoffs. He was phenomenal. And if you wanted to only look at offense, I completely understand Correa winning. But if you take into account defense, Lindor was the best defensive shortstop in the American League for the 3 months that he was in the big leagues. And Correa was about average. And I just think that makes such a difference. And you look at the energy that the Indians played with down the stretch with Lindor in there. I would have voted for Lindor. I don't think Correa was not deserving. He certainly had an amazing rookie year. And he's the future with these two guys and Drelton Simmons and Xander Bogaerts in the American League at shortstop is so bright, but I really think Lindor should have won by a little bit, and I guess I was surprised that the voting played out as I was disappointed but expected.
Again, Zach Meisel, Cleveland.com, one of the Indians beat guys, also author of a couple of books, one on the Indians, one on Ohio State. You can check that out on Amazon.com, also on any of the local bookstores. He'll be back in town signing books in early December. I will see you, my friend, at the winter meetings in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Well, to get some Tennessee barbecue.
Yeah, beautiful. It'll be at Opryland in Nashville. We'll have full coverage on NEOSI, and of course, Zach will have all that coverage over with Paul Hoynes on Cleveland.com. Thanks, Zach. I'll talk to you again.
My pleasure. Thank you.